Welcome, everyone. Thank you for joining us for another session of A Basic Conversation. I'm Brad Rieger. I'll be your host, and I'm here with Father Jim Basic. And Father Basic, today's topic, there's a heaviness to it.
Yeah.
Because we're going to be talking about Pope Francis and his response to the sex abuse scandal during his tenure
yeah,
as Pope.
It's such a delicate topic. It's so difficult. It's been a terrible scandal for the church. I know, just speaking for myself, I've sat and listened to people who had been abused by priests, and it's so different than being abused by a coach or a Boy Scout leader, because in people's minds, it's all connected in with God and Christ and church. And often people feel suicidal and feel like it's their fault or whatever. So it's tough stuff. And I know it's been, you know, revealing to me to sit and listen to the people who have been abused. And it's a terrible thing. It's a blight on the church. And it's so crude and obscene and so on that it's hard to even talk about.
Yeah. How should we start this?
Well, here's what I want to do is, we're talking about Pope Francis.
Yes.
And his response to this. So let's set the stage for what he was made the Pope in 2013, okay? He came into a situation that was just horrible. There were all kind of lawsuits against the church for sex abuse scandals. There were all kind of individuals hurting and suicidal and so on. And his predecessors, you know, do not get sterling marks for what they did as Pope. So, I mean, I just say that. They didn't handle it well in many ways. One really striking example of it is with John Paul II. So he was the Pope, and then Benedict was the Pope, and then Francis came in after Benedict. And Pope John Paul II was a great man and did wonderful things and is a saint and did great things on social justice and so on for the church. But there's one case that stands out that's so hard to deal with, and that is there was a Mexican priest who had started the Legionnaires of Christ and was a popular priest and got many vocations to the priesthood and raised a whole lot of money and so on. But there were people who accused him of sexually abusing them, young members of the Legionnaires of Christ. He was close with John Paul II, and he did raise all kind of money. And John Paul II traveled with him and praised him and so on. It was only after his death that we found out that, well, how terrible he was, not just abusing young members of the Legionnaires of Christ, but he fathered children by two different women and abused his own children. So this all came out after his death. And the Legionnaires had to, you know, distance themselves from him. So it was just a blight on the church. And it was like a blind spot for Pope John Paul II, who, again, I praise, is doing all kind of great things, but not particularly good on that. And that's just the most striking example of how the popes have failed to do it. So we got, this is so complicated for me, but I want to try to tell the story of Francis, that's who we're on, right? And his dealing with sex abuse through the eyes of two different people. The first one is an Irish young woman by the name of Marie Collins, Marie Collins. So as a teenager in Ireland, good Catholic and all of that, she had to go to the hospital. And she goes to the hospital, and she was abused by the priest chaplain at the hospital. She was like 13 years old. And Marie Collins never told anyone for 30 years. Now, that's pretty common again. I dealt with people who for years never talked about it because it was too painful and made them feel suicidal and so on. And so she didn't talk for finally, after 30 years of all kind of illnesses, emotional, psychic illnesses as a result of the abuse, she went and talked to a bishop. And the bishop told her, it was probably your fault. Now, that's common in the church thing. It was probably your fault that this priest abused you. So eventually, she kept getting rebuffed, and she got angry, and said, I'm not going to be quiet, and I'm not going to listen to those hierarchs who tell me it was my fault. Since she came out as a victim activist, so she became on the side of young people who were, other people were being abused, and she became an activist. Now, when Pope Francis, about a year into his papacy, decided to set up a commission to how we can protect minors. It was an apostolic pontifical commission official. He appointed Marie Collins to that post. So she was one of two abuse victims. And so she's going along and on the whole thing. And it's just not going well from her viewpoint. And there was a final straw for her is that she and her committee wanted to have the Vatican officially respond to any verifiable abuse charge, that they had to respond and say, we got your message, and so on. And the Vatican bureaucracy, which we often call the curia or various dicasteries, Vatican wouldn't do it. That simple thing. And so she was just terribly upset and resigned from that commission. So now that, what was her take then on the Pope Francis? That's what I'm trying to get at. She saw Pope Francis as a person who understood the problem, understood the depth of it, wanted to do something to care for victims and keep it from happening again, but he couldn't get past the bureaucracy. He couldn't get past the curia, as we call it, who blocked everything and even blocked this point that the Pope wanted to have. If somebody has this claim, answer them. Say, we got your claim, we'll look at it, and so on. They wouldn't even do that, and Marie Collins said, that's the end of it.
Yeah.
So that's telling us. But her take is that he was sincere, that he wanted to do good, but he couldn't figure out how to manage the bureaucracy. So one take, so that's, I'm using a person
right.
to talk about how to look at, that's one way to look at Francis. Goodwill, recognize the dangers and knew we had to do something but couldn't get it done. I think there was some other component part of that. Here's just to finish up on this, that commission did a lot of work to publicize the problem. Okay, they went around to dioceses all over the world and saying, look, there's a problem, and trying to explain it to it. But as time went on, they became clear, it's not enough to raise awareness. We have to do something about it, and they couldn't get it done. Okay?
Did the other popes put together a pontifical commission Like did Pope Benedict?
They did some things that way. Nothing ever worked.
Got it.
Nothing was ever that helpful.
Because it really blew up in, 2002 with the Boston?
Yeah.
I mean, that's...
Well, we see in the United States, the lot was done. You know, we signed the Dallas Charter that was going to had to try to stop for. So we had to, like when I spoke in Florida, say, when I went there to speak, this is part of the thing, I had to be fingerprinted in Florida and all my background material known to protect the people in Florida where I was going. And I did that gladly, and because it was important, it was necessary. So a lot of things were done that way in the United States. It was not followed up at the universal level.
Yeah. And the Pontifical Commission that Pope Francis put together in 2014, he got criticism because it was too slow, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Like people, it's so raw.
That's right.
People said that should have been his first thing.
Yeah,
it took a year.
That was a year into his pontificate.
Yes, so
and people said, well, what were you doing?
Yeah.
A year is a pressing problem. Yeah. So you're going to see my criticism of Pope Francis, who I love, you know, and thought he was great and liberated a lot of us to work for fulfill Vatican II. I mean, couldn't say enough about him. Every humble man, a true Christian, and so on. But he was slow, for sure. Let me try another thing. Through other eyes, Juan Carlos Cruz. His story. He was a young man in Chile, and as a young man, he went to his father died, and he was grieving, and so as all commonly for Catholics, went to his parish priest to get help and counsel, and in the midst of his grief, now father said, the priest abused him sexually. And continued to do that for 8 years. Now, that sounds weird. Why would that happen? Well, I mean, I talk to people that it's hard to understand, but they can't get out of it. You know, and he couldn't get out of it. So he was, for 8 years, he's abused by this same parish priest sexually. Horrible stuff. And so he finally gets himself together and gets an education, moves to the United States, and is at somewhat of a successful career here. And then one day while he's in the United States, he hears that Pope Francis has appointed a bishop by the name of Barros, if that's how you pronounce it, Bishop Barros, Barros maybe, as a bishop in Chile. Well, this guy had witnessed his abuse on many occasions. So he proceeded to write a long letter to Pope Francis detailing the abuse, all the details. I think it was like 8 pages or something. And he gets it, this is important nuance, he gets it handwritten, hand-delivered through Marie Collins, who we talked about, the Irish girl, and Sean O'Malley, Archbishop from Boston, who was in charge of this commission, hand-delivered. So the Pope goes to Chile at a pastoral visit, and there's a lot of protest that he had made this Barros a bishop. He was encountering protests a lot, and he said, I hate to say it, but I have not found a shred of evidence to say that this Barros did anything bad.
Yeah, I think he was...
So now we got a terrible contradiction.
Yeah, the most striking was on a plane. He was talking to reporters.
Yeah.
And he basically said what you just said. And at the end he said...
And he repeated it in Chile, too.
And he told the reporters, is that clear enough for you?
Yeah.
He was really definitive.
Yeah.
Based on the information that he had... at that time.
Yeah, but he wasn't including what the letter from Juan Carlos, which is a blight that is not explained yet. It's never been explained. So where am I?
So that letter was before that comment?
Yeah. Yes, he had the letter hand-delivered. It's never been resolved. Did he read it or not read it? But anyway, so what happens is that Pope Francis wisely sent a Maltese bishop to Chile to investigate further. And he brings back a report and convinced Francis that there was a problem, that this Barros was a bad man and so on. So Pope Francis did then was fire this bishop, Barros, and all the bishops who were complicit, a lot of them, in fact, all of the Chilean bishops offered their resignation for being complicit in all that was going on. And Pope Francis called Juan Carlos to Cruz, this man I'm talking about, right? To the Vatican to pronounce, to tell him in person to apologize for being so wrong and making such a horrible mistake. And again, trying to get Juan Carlos, who did not ask him, never asked him, did you get my first letter? Never asked him. But Juan Carlos' response again, and that's what I'm getting at. How did these people? He praised Francis as cleaning up the situation in Chile and saying, this is revolutionary, this is great, it's a new life for the church, and it will have repercussions throughout the whole church. So you see, here we're getting Juan Cruz, who then, I mean, Pope has talked to him and commiserated with him and tried to help and so on. And not only Juan Cruz, but also a number of his friends who were in the same situation. So now we got a second take. So Marie Collins said he meant well, couldn't deal with the Curia. Juan Cruz says, well, he made a difference. He's cleaned up Chile. Chile will be different from ever on. The church will be much better. And it will have implications for the whole church. Are you following me here?
I'm with you.
I mean, we're trying to make it personal. Yes. I mean, this is in all kind of names and so on. But so two people, victims of sex abuse, and who have a take on what went on. Where do I want to go? People might have in their mind the name of Vigano, Archbishop Vigano. Let's just get him out of the way here, okay? So Vigano was the nuncio, apostolic nuncio. That means the representative of the Vatican in the United States. And so Vigano turned against Pope Francis completely. And his claim, this might get complicated, but his claim was, it's all about Theodore McCarrick. He was the Cardinal Archbishop of Washington, D.C., Theodore McCarrick, who was abusing seminarians constantly. They had to come and sleep with him every night. So a group of seminarians had to come and sleep with him every night. I mean, we're not talking about a one-time event. A serial misuse of young men. These were the seminarians. What were they going to do? They felt trapped. So we've now got Vigano. He claimed in a letter that he published, which was simultaneously published by EWTN, that's Mother Angelica's television, say EWTN, and this letter where he accused Francis was simultaneously published by them and was picked up by a lot of the very right-wing conservatives who don't like Francis and never liked him, and mostly because of his economic policies, I think. So here's this letter. It accuses, here's the accusation, which is that Pope Benedict had told McCarrick, condemned McCarrick, Archbishop of Washington, right, abusing seminarians every night, that he was no longer to be able to be in public and so on, and no longer to minister and so on. And that when Francis came in, he overturned what Benedict said, condemning McCarrick and removing him from ministry. Well, the only problem with that is that McCarrick continued to interact with Benedict after this supposedly happened, and they were seen in public, and he supported them and so on. There's absolutely no evidence that Benedict ever silenced him. But what we do know for sure is that when Francis came in, that he removed McCarrick from the cardinals of that gave him advice. We call it the College of Cardinals. And he condemned him and said he could never function in public again, removed him from the priesthood, essentially. So Vigano's letter was just obviously wrong and been condemned and so on. But it made a lot of press, and it was one way of trying to make Francis look bad. And Francis, interestingly enough, when the journalist had asked, he says, I'm not going to say one word about that letter from Vigano. You're journalists. You figure it out. Mm-hmm. In other words, he thought good journalists would be able to see the letter is completely misguided and wrong and doesn't have the facts right and so on. So that's how he ended up handling that. A lot of people were upset with Francis that he wasn't more vigorous and say that's wrong, and for these three reasons. He never did, never did. So we got one more take, okay, on what's going on. So now let me get to, I think it was 2018 that Pope Francis issued a letter to the whole Catholic Church, and he couched the letter in we language. He says, we have failed the young people. We who should be protecting our younger people failed miserably. We didn't protect them. We weren't there when they needed us. We. The other thing I suppose that strikes me about that letter was his insistence that the whole church had to solve the problem. That the Pope, as Pope, he can't solve this problem, sex abuse scandal. The whole church has to, we all have to be involved in it. We all have to do our part. So this is now typical of Francis. He always thought that any top-down solution that would come from him and be implemented by bishops was going to fail. He distrusted top-down solutions. He never thought, well, I can do this edict and it'll be good and all my priests will take care of it. In fact, he saw clericalism in this letter, you might remember. He saw clericalism as one of the problems. That is an overemphasis on the clergy. This is the Pope's church or it's the priest's church and so on. Thought that's a big mistake. So we have to start from below. He called it synodality. We have to start listening and so on. So we all have to be part of it. Now, I tell you something that came to my mind. You know, I do research for this program, Brad. I don't just show up. And I thought, well, I got to know more about my interviewer. You know what? I found a letter. I found a letter that you wrote. I probably won't get to the year exactly right.
2018.
Yeah, but it's a letter that you wrote to Pope Francis.
I did, yes.
Is that right?
Correct, and it was...
Tell me about that letter. I did all that research. You know, it fits into my mind perfectly. You said, this is what you did and have done, what Francis thinks we need. We all got to do our part. This was your part. Tell me about it.
Well, I wrote it from the standpoint of a lifelong Catholic, but actually from my professional experience of educator for 31 years, being a superintendent my last 12 years, responsible for 8,000 students, right? And then also as a CEO in the private sector. And for me, I started off the letter just saying that, very much like you, what resonated with me with Pope Francis was his focus on Jesus' message, the key themes of love, service, mercy, compassion, and a reduction in or reducing the bureaucracy and dogma of the church, even though that's centuries of that.
Right.
So he had, for me, had the right emphasis, but I was so distraught by what had transpired and was coming through that I basically told him that it had to be action. It's not enough just to be empathetic or ask forgiveness. And even
it's a letter now to Pope Francis.
Yes.
That you wrote.
Yes. And there had to be, I mean, for people, it's so basic about the protection of children, right? It didn't seem like there needed to be a lot of commissions on what needed to be fixed from people outside, mm-hmm. even though they're the curia and all that. So I just laid out that, you know, the priests should be removed and prosecuted, because if something like that happened in the school district, those people are removed and prosecuted.
Yeah.
It's real easy. The bishops and cardinals that...
And if you heard about it, you had to report it to the police, right?
Being a mandatory reporter,
to the police.
Yes.
Yeah.
And for myself as a Catholic to see that they couldn't even do basic protections, at least initially.
Yeah.
And to have, you shouldn't need commissions for that if you're really Christ-like, I guess. I don't think Christ would say, hey, let's have a commission to see how we can figure out how to protect kids. So it was pretty straightforward, and I just laid out a bunch of things. And at the end, I just said, you know, you're transforming the church, the soul of the church, but the reality is you're going to be judged on how you deal with this sex abuse case. And if you don't...
Some of the specific things you suggested, I'm not remembering all of them, but I thought they were good suggestions.
Well, you know, I mean, there's...
Give me a couple highlights.
I mean, elevating the... I mean, besides what I just said about the removal and the prosecution, really involved making everyone a mandatory reporter within the Catholic Church.
Uh-huh.
I mean, there's a whole other piece about who should be in the priesthood or in the clerical sense, right? And so I raised this idea of elevating women and
that's what struck me. Yeah.
Because my gut would be that if there were women in leadership roles from way back, there's no way children would be harmed.
Yeah.
There's just no way. And I mean, women priests and married priests, that's a structural long-term, but I think that there's a healthiness to that from my perspective. Okay. Many people don't share that, but from my perspective. And I also think that you know, if you look at the apartheid, you know, Nelson Mandela, they did a reconciliation commission.
Yes.
And it was brutal. But everyone who had anything to say came
out. But
it
was based on the idea of it was a truth commission, meaning you can come forward and say the truth.
Yes.
You can report what really happened under apartheid. It was a brilliant move.
And for me, I don't think that the Catholic Church is fully dealing with it until they have something like that.
Yeah.
There's been steps, for sure, in progress, but it is that bad that something that openness to deal with the tragedy and this the hurtfulness.
Yeah.
So, I got no response. I copied the Archbishop in Detroit because I grew up in the Detroit metro area.
No response from them?
Right. Bishop Thomas and whoever was leading the United States Conference of Catholic Bishops. Yeah. No response. The interesting part is that I sent it to priests I know. I know I sent it to you and maybe about 10 other priests, and all got responses back from them.
Yeah.
They were local priests.
Yeah.
And they said it really resonated.
Yeah. Well, it's been, for the priests, it's such a blight and so much pain connected with it. So often the ones I dealt with were suicidal. And I want to go back to some of the studies about clericalism and so on. That again, the Pope in the letter does say clericalism is a big problem. And seminaries, as we've known them, have fostered clericalism. I was in a seminary for a lot of years. We never heard any click of high heels in the seminary. And no women interactions. We had no women spiritual directors, no women professors, and so on. It was just a one-sided world, and it created a sense of clericalism. And in that kind of clericalism, I think what the Pope has said too, that it created like a secrecy, like we protected one another. I mean, I know we did that with alcoholic priests, that we explained away their behavior, said, oh yeah, Father had a little too much to drink, but. So, I mean, we were very conscious of protecting one another, if I'm saying that right, and trying to explain away bad behavior. And so when it came down to something like the sex abuse thing, which is hurting minors, we're talking about kids. We're talking about Marie Collins living for 30 years with illnesses, emotional distress, 30 years of her life. And so one of the things that would be seminary reform, where young men would be prepared to live in a world in which there were women parishioners, you know. And so, I mean, put it this way, to come out of a seminary training and now to have prominent, strong women in a parish and so on, it was not easy to figure out how to do that without training, without practice. And there's studies that done again in Ireland that showed that one of the reasons that the priests got involved in abusing minors was that they ended up feeling powerless in the real world. In other words, they couldn't control their situation. They couldn't figure out how to handle strong women. They didn't know how to keep in their homilies, make sure that they were addressing the questions and problems of women and as well as men. And that some priests, because they were now feeling powerless, turned to abusing children where they had control over them. That's a study by a psychologist in Ireland that I've been very influenced by her work. And it makes a certain degree of sense to me. So, Brad, we've had Francis on sex abuse, mixed reviews. Oh, he tried. I like Marie Collins' take on it, that he understood the problem. He empathized with the problem. He met with victims. Although I must say, when he came to the United States on his pastoral visit, he had no meetings scheduled with victims of abuse on the schedule given by the Vatican. Yeah. And so he figured out how to get a conversation into the mix. But that's how blind they were to what was really going on. I love Pope Francis, and he's done so much good. I remember one woman theologian telling me, you know, he's not good in dealing with women, but he's so good on so many things, I'm going to give him a pass on that issue. Tough subject, Brad. Painful subject. Minors, kids. I love your connection with the school situation and how you would handle that. And I think maybe we'd all learn a bit. But let's give you a fun... Pope Francis, we all got to contribute. You contributed by writing a letter, you know, and sharing your work situation. Other people might do it by befriending a victim or whatever. But we all have to do our part to deal with this horrendous problem.
Thank you, Father Basin.